Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Glenn Mason said a long time ago at the University of Minnesota, you need a pair and a spare.
Yes, thank you, PJ. You didn't have the same jump in your voice the last time I talked to you. Talking about a pair and a spare podcast, Justin Gard from The Fan, Ryan Burns, GopherIllustrated.com, and Chip Scoggins from the Star Tribune. Here we are in week five, and we talk about Glenn Mason's pair and a spare quote all the time, Chipper. I had another one in mind. Brutal. B-R-U-T-A-L. In that case, he was talking about, I think, USC's schedule or Notre Dame's schedule because it was Big Ten play from way back when, and welcome to the Big Ten is how you and I have greeted each other for the last decade and a half. But any other words you want to – you wrote plenty of words on the game against Bowling Green, Chip. Anything you'd like to add?
We got a lot to unpack in this episode here. A lot to unpack. I that was as confounding a performance as I've seen from a Gopher football team maybe in my time in Minnesota.
There's a lot to be said about that quote right there.
Well, here's why. Because I read what you wrote, and I think you went a little too easy on him. No, I'm kidding. But, like, with Brewster's teams, it made sense. Mm-hmm. Like, with a bad team, like, we were trying to think, when is the worst loss? But maybe New Mexico State, Jerry Kill's first year. But that team was terrible, right? That was coming out. Like, you expected there were going to be some bumps in the road. Why Saturday was such a mess is because you expect this team to be pretty good, decent, contend for the West. And we haven't seen this in the P.J. Fleck era where they've just completely bombed. So that's why, to me, it was absolutely stunning.
Well, that coming off the way they played at Colorado and your 31-point favorites. This was one of the 20 biggest upsets by point spread in college football in the last four decades. Mm-hmm. So we have not seen this. I haven't seen this.
What a stat. I mean, to your point, you go from the highest of highs off Colorado, you slap a Pac-12 team by 30 points, and then you come back the next week and lose as a 30-point favorite to Bowling Green, who, oh, by the way, just got their first win over Murray State in their last
– Yeah.
Been a very long time.
Well, our sponsor is Northern Lids. They make custom hats for everybody. NorthernLids.com is where you want to start. Is it piling on to have them make one that says – from Rocky Mountain High to Rock Bottom.
Look at you.
Northern Lids could do it.
Branding.
I could be a writer.
Yes.
Northern Lids, if you want. I'm not sure anybody would buy it. Maybe the Gophers would use it for motivation or something, but that's what I felt. That's what I said on Saturday. It was Rocky Mountain High and then just Rock Bottom. There's no other way to describe it.
There isn't. And that's where, again, we'll get into this game, but it's like you try to project this thing out, and it's like, are you going to see the top team? You going to see the low team? You going to see somewhere in between? I have no idea what to expect. We all saw it Saturday. We saw it on the Monday press conference. It's been a long time since I've seen P.J. Fleck this flummoxed in terms of what this team is. I think he used the quote, this is the most inconsistent team he's had, something about an inconsistent spectrum. But it's like, why are they so inconsistent when it's the most veteran-laden team we've seen in a long time?
And I was thinking about this even over the weekend and Sunday about like future columns on what I want to write this week in that – would the real Gophers stand up? Right? You remember that old show? Right?
Oh, yeah.
Ohio State, you walked out of there, okay, they could be a pretty good team.
Yeah.
First half of Miami,
looked
really good.
Look at
second
this.
Half, they looked awful.
Right.
Colorado, okay, this could be a pretty good team. Saturday, this team's, you don't know what they are, or I have no idea what they're trying to accomplish on offense. None. I don't, other than. Have the most carries in the history of football.
Looking like a service academy out here.
They are up there with like Army in terms of carries.
I looked it up. They have the fifth lowest pass attempts in college football. The only four teams that have fewer, Michigan, which they're running the ball as good as anybody, and the three service academies.
Yep. We do triple option. If you haven't watched Army Navy in a while, they still do triple option.
So they have, and they're number seven in rushing attempts. That math doesn't work. You have a fourth-year starting quarterback in the most veteran offensive line, which was awful Saturday.
Yep.
I don't understand what they're doing with this offense.
Well, let's start there because the passing is the biggest thing.
Yes.
So the question is why? Do we have an answer for that? Why are – I think you wrote about it, or you – I can't remember. I've read both of you guys, and they're similar because that's the story, right?
Yeah.
Like, you either don't – you don't trust something about the passing game, which to me it can't be Tanner because he can throw.
Well, I don't think – I don't know if it can't be.
I don't know. Well,
it shouldn't be.
But if you don't, then you got the wrong guy playing quarterback.
Yeah, right, which you should already know by now. Like, that's what's – the whole thing is confusing because it's like, what part – is it just you just want to run the ball? Is it the usual non-conference thing that we've talked about and you just kind of forgot about it? Or because I can't believe they don't want to throw the ball. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And here's the thing, which this quote yesterday just blew my mind when Fleck said, well, Chris Altman-Bell got hurt on the first play and we basically, that was the game plan. We were going to feature him. It's like,
that right. was a what? Scott Frost-esque quote there. You remember the Illinois game where Nebraska loses and he's like, well, half our game plan went out because the defense wasn't what we thought it was.
You right. can't,
even if that was the plan and Chris went out and the whole thing got flummoxed, you can't say that in the media. That's
Adjust.
An egregious quote.
Yeah.
Adjust. Make adjustments. That's
right.
That's what you're paid $4.5 million to do.
But to your point, with the passing game, Tanner Morgan, a fourth-year starting quarterback, has thrown the ball 18 or more times in one game and they're 2-2. I mean, why is Minnesota not throwing the ball? I don't know. I think we have to unpack it. I mean, how many of us here think it's because Sanford and Fleck don't trust Tanner?
See, I don't know if it's Tanner as much as it seems like it's all of it. Like, they don't know if they're going to get the right protection. They don't know if a wide receiver is going to fall down. And then they also don't know if Tanner's going to make the throw because he did miss. I mean, it was all of them on Saturday.
Right.
It was terrible blocking, terrible blitz pickup, terrible route running, terrible throws at any given point. It was one of those things. So, and I think from what PJ said yesterday, it was – well, we tried some stuff early, and they did. First play of the game's a pass to Crabb. He gets hurt.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly were going to – you know we want to run. We know we want to run. Hey, let's throw it. Let's establish it that way. And truthfully, in the 5 years that I remember, like, a lot of times when they've had trouble running the ball, they'll throw a pass for a first down, get up, and run the ball for 12 yards right after that. Like, they've kind of softened it up. So I think that's what they were trying to do. And PJ said, we missed some shots early, which they did.
They missed a shot early.
Yeah.
And then they missed Michael Brown Stevens deep.
Yeah.
Again, he had a step on the guy. Tanner just overthrows it. Why not go back to it?
Yeah.
The lack of deep passing is also something that's interesting.
Yeah. Or
just in general, I told you when we were talking in the hallway, Minnesota is dead last in the Big Ten in yards after catch.
Yeah.
To me, that says either you don't have the horses, every throw is a tight window throw and there's nowhere to go. Whereas you look at that 2019 season, it seemed like
yak all over the place.
Slants.
Yeah.
Well, where is the quick passing game?
That's
there is none.
If you want to get that passing game in rhythm and you're facing blitzes, just throw a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a slant. You know, get Tanner some confidence and some rhythm, and we're just not seeing that. And so I don't know that they don't trust the quarterback. I think one, particularly in non-conference, they're just predisposed. Let's just run the ball and do whatever we do.
Yeah, right, right.
Okay, that's their philosophy.
Which, they've done it and been close to being burned, but were never burned before.
So
he's won a lot of games doing it, so I get why to a certain extent, but this is always the danger. If things completely melt down, you're going to lose and have one of the worst losses in program history.
Yeah, but there's something about it, whether it's the line pass blocking, Tanner, the wide receiver core without Crabb. I mean, the Dalen Wright explanation, if that's what it was yesterday, was bizarre. I mean,
I don't know why he said that, where it was, you know, it wasn't part of the game plan. I think it's an energy and effort issue, which if it is, which I believe it is with him, with consistency from rep to rep, whether he's the primary guy or he's run blocking, why not just come out and say that? That's a much more reasonable explanation. Maybe he doesn't want to throw the kid under the bus, but
probably.
But the way he phrased it was just like, okay.
Yeah.
He said, no big deal, just he wasn't part of the game plan.
Well, I hope he's a part of the game plan this weekend.
After he caught a touchdown pass in front of John Lynch against Ohio State, it's like, I might mix him in, you know? Yeah, the whole thing, it's confounding, it's confusing. But like you've said, Bernsie, like, I think they're going to play well against Purdue. That might be my naivety, but I've seen it for a couple of years that, you know, they'll surprise you out of nowhere. And as much of a shock as Saturday was, it's like, I know they're underdogs at Purdue, but I'm like, they can go in and beat Purdue? Why couldn't they go in and beat Purdue?
Well, I think it starts with the O-line. Is the O-line going to want to show up? Is, like, specifically, look at
the ups and downs
of, like, Daniel Faalele. Like, starting right tackle, plays incredibly well against Ohio State, looks like a potential top 100 pick. Next week against Miami, he's absolutely not the same player. plays well against Colorado, and then he's just beaten constantly by Bowling Green guys. Now, how is the most veteran part of your team, the most experienced part of your team, having the amount of issues that they were having? You look at that 4th-and-1 where PJ decides to go for it. Sam Schluter gets baptized in the backfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Trey Potts has nowhere to go.
And I got to be honest with you. I know people hated the call. I didn't mind it necessarily. Was it?
I see why you did it.
I did too. I mean, if you're thinking, okay, it's 4th-and-1. If we can't get it against Bowling Green, then and you need a spark. I didn't necessarily mind. I hated the play call.
Yeah.
He's in shotgun. It's a slow developing. You're 5 yards back. It's like.
Right.
When was the last time we saw them go play action on 2nd-and-short, 3rd-and-short, 4th-and-short at all this season?
Or get up under center and just sneak it. Follow your center, who's a really good player.
Yeah.
That part baffled me. But PJ didn't really. He was asked about the inconsistency on the offensive line mm-hmm. after the game. He almost felt like.
Well, he was asked about it on Monday where...
And he almost felt like they weren't inconsistent. I don't know how he could say that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question was asked on Monday, you know, why did you guys struggle with stunts and twists?
Right.
And he's like, well, we didn't the first three games, so why are you even at... Well,
yeah.
It's because you did against Bowling Green, of all people.
Right, right.
So why... I mean, this isn't anything new. With the smaller, quicker defensive linemen, these big maulers up front, I mean, Faalele and Dunlap are both over 350. You can see why they struggle, but...
It is weird that they struggle with those type of things where it takes communication and being together for a long time because this group has been together forever.
Well, here's the thing.
Let me ask you this. Go ahead.
The rotating lineman.
That's where I wanted to go next.
And that's where, from talking with Derek Burns, the former Golden Gopher offensive lineman on Gopher Gridiron Radio, he thinks that's the big issue there is because they're rotating guards every series and tackles every series, they're going to communicate within that specific drive, but when you have somebody new next to you and you try to make that call on the next drive, somebody's going to be a step slow, and that got Tanner obliterated at times. I don't understand the 6 offensive linemen rotating thing.
Yeah, I mean, I get it in theory because defensive lines do it and say we're fresher at the end.
But when was the last time you saw an offensive line of a high quality, whether it's Big Ten or NFL, rotate 6 offensive linemen consistently?
I don't think I've ever seen
it. I don't think I've ever seen it.
And that's why it's certainly worth discussing, is because there's got to be a reason why the Wild ebbs and flows. And that's really the only thing you can come up with, right? Is that they're flipping
the
guys all over the place. They're bringing in, Axel Rushmeyer to play fullback. Their guys are moving all over. That's got to be it. Or at least it's got to be something
part of it.
That you might have to look at and say, are we doing too much? Are we trying too much? Are we getting too cute?
Yeah. I think there's probably something to that. But even still, they've been together enough, and they've played enough football that a stunt from Bowling Green should not throw them that out of whack, I wouldn't think.
Right.
But here's the thing. You think other teams aren't going to see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, this is going to be copycat. I mean, they're going to face a lot of different blitz. Now, you could say Bowling Green came in scot-free, and they could just say whatever, get over-aggressive with some of the blitzes and things they tried because what do they have to lose? But... That, to me, everything, and I know everybody wants the quarterback change, and Tanner has to be a lot better. I mean, some of the throws he missed were just bad. But if that offensive line doesn't play up to their capability, your quarterback's going to look bad.
Yeah.
Because
he needs a little cleaner.
He needs a cleaner, because he's just not the type of quarterback that's going to improvise and scramble.
I've got Tanner, number 3 on the list of things. Like, I know Tanner was bad, played probably the worst game of his career, but Mike Sanford in that passing offense was a much bigger issue. The offensive line was a much bigger issue to me. Again, Tanner plays the worst game of his career, but you look at some of the hits he's taken on third down, and it's...
He got smoked. They thought one was a targeting. That's how bad it looked. And it wasn't even close to a target.
But how do we feel that a fourth-year quarterback, and I fully believe this, doesn't have the ability to hot route?
That they allow him to do it?
Correct.
Yeah.
I don't believe he has the ability to do many things in this offense that is him seeing something where... If he sees, because again, they'll get to the line with 15 seconds on the play clock, and then they'll do a fake hut, and you can see who's going to come probably and who's not. And if he sees the corners leaking in, he doesn't have the ability to audible, say, hey, you run a quick something so I can get the ball out of my hands. But that's Fleck. It's the whole control aspect.
It does drive me crazy that you have a fourth-year starting quarterback who's 35 years old, has to look to the sideline until the very last second of every play.
Yeah.
Even their third to last possession.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
Where is the urgency?
Yeah.
They're running the clock like they had a 10-point lead.
Well, it's funny they're playing Purdue this week because I remember PJ's first year. Remember there was the it was the year where they had like 9 weather delays. Yeah. Like every game was delayed and they weren't very good. It was just a, it was just a death march of a season.
Yeah.
Like like literally we were about to kick off in Ann Arbor and all of a sudden a hurricane comes through. And we're like, oh man, it's already a night game. We're gonna be here till 3 a.m. But they came out. It was fourth quarter when they had the delay at Purdue and they came out and I think the game was tied. It was either tied or they were down. I can't remember. And there was like 7 minutes left. And it was very clear PJ was trying to just get the ball down the field, score with 10 seconds left, and end the game right there. Despite all evidence to the contrary on Saturday that they would be able to do that offensively, don't you think that's what he was trying to do?
100%.
Yeah, 100%. We need one drive, and we're going to get out of here, and this is going to be the one we get. We did it against Miami a couple weeks ago and finished it. And so I see what he's thinking, but it's also like that's not the way the game was played,
no.
And you might need – I mean, as it was, they got lucky to get that extra opportunity because of the fumble. But you're right. I was flummoxed by that. It's like, if anything, let's just get going so that your guys can run. They haven't moved in an hour and a half.
Could they do hurry up? I mean, this offense?
Well, could they score?
Well, when was the last time you saw a Gopher football offensive drive, 4 plays, 75 yards? When was the last time you saw a 50-plus yard touchdown?
Probably 2019.
That's the issue here is where the are Outback the explosive Bowl? Plays in this offense?
Yeah.
Trey Potts finally has a 50-yard run, but passing play-wise, I mean, I think your longest passing play in the year, 30 yards?
Probably either Crabb or Daylon Wright against Colorado.
Yeah,
Those were both like 25 or 30. That third down pass was 32 yards or something like that to Chris.
So, yeah, you look at the 10-12 play, 75-yard drives, but it's like, where are the explosive plays anywhere where you can get guys in space and potentially have a game-changing type of play? With 7 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
I don't know that this offense is capable of that, and that's the issue.
Yeah, do they have the capability, if they have to go fast, where Tanner doesn't have to look to the sideline for 20 seconds to get the play?
Tanner would be better in that instance. He's not thinking. It's just quick rhythm throws, which he has. Like, you look at the game against Bowling Green, he'd make one throw on first down. Like, the start of the second half is a perfect example. They throw it, holding call. Yep. They throw it again, 20 yards. Then like 12 straight runs. How do you expect your quarterback to then play well when he goes an entire quarter without throwing another pass?
Mm-hmm.
It was two passes and then 12 straight runs. And it's just, I said it in I think week one or week two, it just feels so disjointed, this offense. Like, what do they want to be? How are they going to incorporate the pass game? And what we don't know, or what I don't know, is, and we've talked about it, is this Mike Samford or is this PJ Fleck saying this is what you do? And if this is Mike Samford, this is offense, I think you have to let Matt Simon take a crack at play calling. I don't think PJ is going to do it.
Right.
But something is just not working with this.
I think it's Fleck to an extent. I mean, it's not football, it's Fleck ball. We've seen that for the 5 years, regardless of coordinator, with these situations where he's incredibly risk averse, just wants to run the ball, get out of non-conference. This is the first time it burned him.
Right.
But, I mean, you look at – with Sanford specifically, it's the quarterback play. I mean, we go back to the Jordan Love thing, where Jordan Love, before Mike Sanford gets there, looks like a first-round draft pick. When Sanford's there for a year, the percentages and everything go down. Tanner Morgan in year 3 and 4 now, after a stellar sophomore campaign, the stats have gone down. And that's where I look at, like, the passing concepts. Again, I don't pretend to be the X's and O guru. But you go back and watch those plays on third down where Tanner's going to have to scramble for his life or obliterated – all of these routes take 4 or 5 seconds to develop and open. That's the primary guy. Well, the offensive line could only block for 3 seconds, and why didn't he adjust as the game went on? And that's where we get to the stat now, where Fleck is 0-17 trailing at halftime.
Let's get to that stat in a minute, but with Tanner, because we can't overlook, he was one of the best quarterbacks in college football as a sophomore.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's going the wrong way quickly.
Yeah.
Now, is that because he had 2 NFL wide receivers? Is it because he had a different offensive coordinator?
Yeah.
Is it all of those things?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you know, other things that are happening? But we can't ignore the fact that we thought this guy was going to be a high-level NFL or maybe a draftable
QB. Yeah.
The way he played, his accuracy, everything about him. I remember watching him think, man, this guy's a good quarterback.
Right. So what has happened?
He looked broken on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I don't know if those hits... He took the hardest hit I've seen him take, that one.
Yeah.
He popped up, but my God.
He popped up at that.
Yeah.
That's the definition of being eviscerated.
But I do wonder if those hits rattled him.
For sure.
And some of his throws, because his throws were so far off the mark after that.
Well, that's where he has struggled. Like, when he's not unlike Kirk Cousins. truthfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see when Cousins now is feeling like as comfortable as he's ever, he's just throwing darts all over the place. Mm-hmm. But, like, I even go back to the Wisconsin game in 2019. Like, they got pressure on Tanner. He wasn't as good, you know, at critical points. First play of the game in the Outback Bowl. Got pressure on Tanner. Little bit of sloppy footwork, interception. Now, yeah, it ended up not hurting him, but you can tell when he's feeling jumpy. And the final interception is 100% him just being jumpy. The second to last one, he got smoked.
Hit, yeah.
Well, and you remember on the play he gets eviscerated with, they thought it was targeting. He was going to step into the throw, and then he was like, nope, I'm just going to take the hit and die. And in the fourth quarter there, where he throws his first interception, it's the same play, and he's like, yeah, you know what? I got to let this thing go. He short arms it. But the deep ball is the interesting part. Because we all remember the 2019 season. I looked into it on Pro Football Focus yesterday. In 2019, in 13 games, on throws of 20-plus yards, Tanner completed 56% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, one interception, like 1,100 yards.
Yeah, they were dimes.
Yeah.
The subsequent 11 games now in 2020 and 2021, under Mike Sanford and without some NFL guys, he's completing only 36% of his down-the-field passes, a drop of 20%, one touchdown, two interceptions.
Just for the audience, Burnsy has that all off the top of his head. There are no notes in front of Burnsy. That's
no
how
cheat,
good.
Yeah.
That's why you should subscribe to GopherIllustrated.com, because Burnsy's doing that type of work.
Like, his best throw in 2019 was these deep shots down the field where they could get yards after catch.
Yeah. Yep.
And now, do we think that Tanner just forgot how to throw the deep ball? Do we think it's the receivers? Do we think it's the concepts? I think it's a combination of the latter two, but it's just, you got to figure him out down the field.
Yeah, it's not just one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be too easy. That'd be too simplistic. I mean, I think it's the whole, everything we're talking about.
At different times. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they have to figure it. I mean, you know, PJ said, you know, losing that, and you can watch the film, and you can, there's just so much that you have to correct. And I don't know if you can correct all that in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
But as we were talking before we came in here, the Big Ten West ain't good.
Yeah, they've got some lifeboats.
It is not good.
I mean, even Purdue last week, they needed a late touchdown to beat an Illinois. They only scored 13 points on a bad Illinois defense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Purdue's incredibly banged up.
Yeah.
You got the all-world wide receiver, David.
It seems
David
like they always are banged up. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that Mike Allstott 2.0 and Xander Horvath is out for this game.
Who's still there.
Yeah. Their second-string running back, King Doru, missed last week's game with a non-COVID-related illness. David Bell is the big one who
concussion,
torched the Gophers the last 2 years,
that
over 100
scary.
Yards.
Yeah. I was watching that in Boulder. That was scary.
A scary concussion against Notre Dame. He missed the game. I have no idea if he'll play. And then everybody remember the tight end who caught the pass interference that wasn't a pass
pushed
interference
off.
That was a pass interference.
Yeah. Clear push-off.
He got banged up. So they might be without, like, their top four skill position players when they face a Gopher defense, by the way.
Good transition.
That is playing at as well as we've seen them play in now back-to-back weeks.
Their defensive line is starting to show up.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that group is, the last 2 weeks we've seen, like, the capability, pass rush. I think the depth. When you can bring Rush off, Tom,
yeah,
off the
edge. He knows his role. I mean, he's
doing
he's good
it well.
At it. Yeah.
And whatever your snaps are, make the most of them, and that kid is. Mm-hmm. Carter. I think
that was D'Angelo Carter's best game of his career.
Yeah.
His name is officially Trill now. Did you get that email?
Yes. I need to remind people that D'Angelo Carter's is Trill.
And now he's Trill. In his first game at Trill, he played well. It was bad luck. He got a face mask penalty.
Yeah, on a sack.
And it was basically because he was just, like, bringing his arm down, and it wasn't like a typical face mask.
I mean, that was the most interior pressure we've seen from a defensive tackle for the Gophers since Steven Richardson to me.
Yeah.
Stovetop.
Yeah.
Forgot about stove. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. When I was out there in fall camp early,
he was good.
Someone with the team said, keep an eye on Carter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the most improved guy.
Five pressures, four hurries. I mean, and now we look at Boye Mafe through four games, and it's funny, Rossi talks about before the Colorado game, like, somebody asked him about Boye, and he's like, he needs to be better. We've challenged him. It's not been up to standard. He's got now four sacks the last 2 weeks. He's got four sacks through four games. Might be the first Gopher to get double-digit sacks since 2009 of Willie VanDesteeg. But it's interesting you guys mentioned the snaps, because Rush and Mafe are kind of playing equal snaps. They're only out there, say, 55, 60% of the time. I think that helps them late in the game.
Sure.
No question.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Being able to rotate with the depth there, and then the much maligned linebacker, Mariano Sorry-Marin, number 55, he's played probably the two best weeks back-to-back of his entire career. I mean, he steps in front of that throw for an interception. He's playing well in the run game. I mean, that's where, you go against Purdue this week.
I think their linebacker plays. Jack Gimmons has brought something.
Yep.
Oliver's made some splash plays. I think their front seven's been pretty darn good the last 2 weeks.
I agree. What worries me about the linebacker, specifically 55, is like the smart teams, and Miami did this to a certain extent, they're going to find a way to get him out in space and go cover this guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, and I've seen that. Speaking of the Big Ten West, I've seen good teams do that to Iowa forever because it's similar. It's like you've got this good run-stopping linebacker. Now, this year's maybe a bad example because they're doing everything.
Yep.
But it's like when they would play Ohio State or they would play Michigan, it's like, all right, you're going to cover this guy in the slot. Good luck. Like, we're not running the ball here, bud. Like, you're going to go have to cover this guy in space. That's still where I think they're vulnerable. But in terms of the run game, they've been spectacular the last couple of weeks.
And they're going to be again because Purdue refuses to run the ball. They don't have the horses to run the ball. But
and Purdue's just so banged up. I mean, the Gophers should have a very good performance this week because you're just facing a depleted offense.
Well, I think the
defense
raises the bar for you, or at least the floor, because I don't know that this – with the way Minnesota's defense is playing – I think Purdue's offense is similar enough to Bowling Green, where they're both spread teams. Bowling Green wanted to do more stuff near the line of scrimmage, where Purdue's going to want to take more vertical shots. But I'm glad you have Purdue before Bowling Green offensively, and I think you can limit Purdue's offense to the way Minnesota's defense is playing right now, 17, 21 points. Now, again, we saw Minnesota's offense score 30-plus the first three games and then completely lay an egg last week, and we have no idea what to expect now.
Well, and that's why I'm not in full-fledged, like, panic mode, although the passing game, as we've talked about, it's like they have enough guys, I think, and they have enough history, I think, that I don't think they're going to score. What'd they score, 10 points? 10 points against Bowling Green? Like, that to me seems like such an outlier, even with all the inefficiencies that we've already talked about. It's like, and if they don't figure it out, then you know that then you blow up everything on the offensive side.
Yeah, and I just feel like that offensive line has too much talent to play that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for whatever reason. And I have no idea where that came from.
I don't either.
Because we've seen them the week before, they just absolutely throttled.
Oh, Colorado guys were getting hurt like every other play.
And that was a good front seven for Colorado.
We think.
I still think they are.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're too good to play what they showed Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they come back and, you know, play like we saw at Colorado, who knows. But that's why I feel like, okay, this offense can still score points.
Right.
But you're going to be facing Big Ten athletes now,
right?
And you have to have more balance. You've got to figure out this passing game. It can't just be, let's see what Potts can do.
Well, they're still going to be able to run the ball, I'll tell you. Last week, Illinois running backs over 6 yards a carry against Purdue. Week before, Notre Dame running backs over 5 yards a carry. That tells me Minnesota's going to be able to lean on the run the ball at least efficiently and effectively. But it comes back to the passing game. I mean, if it's that kind of running performance and you don't jumpstart the passing game again, you might lose, or at least it's going to be a close game. But if you can complement each other, mm-hmm. which is a novel concept
right.
for this offense, I think you can win this game probably by 7 to 10 points.
Well, people always ask, you know, one of the cliches is like, were they looking ahead? Were they overlooking? And here's what I'll say. I don't think – like, first of all, I don't think, like, PJ allows it. Like, just the way they practice. Like, you've all been there. It's insane.
Yeah.
But I do think players pick up on what you're being asked to do for a game plan,
yeah.
if that makes sense.
Yes.
And if they're going through on Wednesday and Thursday and they're going, oh, not a lot of passes here, not a lot of stuff here. Oh, we're just going to do this run scheme. We're not going to do that. I think they pick it up and go, okay, we should just be able to do this.
Yeah.
And then there is that natural letdown of, and then you're in the middle of a meat grinder because you can't do any of it.
Well, that's the thing. It's you're thinking, okay, we're just going to run the ball. We're just going to be vanilla. We're just going to do enough. Well, as you said, they've gotten by with that.
Yeah.
But it just takes one performance where it's like you get in there and like, uh-oh.
Right.
Like they had no plan B.
Right.
They had no adjustment. And then let's go back to the stat. We can't just ignore 0-17
mm-hmm.
PJ's record when they don't.
When they're trailing at halftime.
I mean, mm-hmm. that, as I wrote, that's a damning stat. I'm sorry. It just is that you don't have one come from behind win when you're, you know. Now, I know there's probably games in there where they're trailing, then got the lead, and then lost it back, but that's not really a pat on the back either.
Well, the interesting part about that is somebody sent me this morning, I think something from the Strib back in Jerry Kill days. I think Kill started his tenure at Minnesota 0-22 trailing at halftime, too.
Yeah.
It's not just a flex stat, it's a Minnesota coaching stat. And that's where, again, it's about second half adjustments. And that's where, specifically in the non conference now, where it's against lesser opponents. We've now seen it between South Dakota State, Georgia Southern, Fresno State, Miami of Ohio. Why is it that Fleck, again, I think it's because you look at those four games before Bowling Green, they were able to eke it out. But mm-hmm. why is it that's the brand of football he wants to play. When you look at other teams, even like Michigan, or excuse me, like your two rivals, Iowa,
yeah,
and you look at Wisconsin. I mean, they pass the ball enough in those games, especially early in the game, to get a big lead. But here it's, we're just going to run, pass a couple times. Have success on those passing plays, by the way. Like Brevin Spanford, they have a beautifully designed play for him.
Yeah.
20 yards, and then they never come back to it the entire time.
Yeah, the way they started out, I mean, the first series, you're like, wow, okay,
there it is.
We're seeing some wrinkles here.
Yes.
And it just kind of went away from that. So it'll be interesting to see if this, a loss like this and the way it unfolded, changes any fundamental
belief
about
plan.
Yeah.
Approach.
I think it has to, right?
Well, the way that Fleck has looked in the last 48 hours, we've all seen it Saturday after the game, Monday at the press conference. It's been years, probably since 2018.
He
Illinois.
Didn't have the usual zest.
No, he's searching for answers. Yeah. And you hope that this is the turning point where you actually do implement some changes. Because, again, I love the saying, I hear what you say, but I trust what you do. I hear you're going to try to make changes, but are we going to see that on Saturday? I don't know, but 0-17 trailing in halftime. So say they go into the halftime against Purdue down 14-13.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to implement changes and actually come away with a victory? I don't know. I mean, I'll ask you two. You guys have been around this program longer than I have. I mean, do you think that Fleck in now year five and with a very veteran-laden team is actually going to change at least some of the identity of what they are offensively?
No.
The only thing I think he might change is not get so, is it impatient or patient? Because I would say, will he let things breathe a little bit more before he just shuts them down? Because we've seen it now two games, you know, yeah. Miami, they just shut it down after a couple of drops and one thing he didn't like from Dalen Wright, or probably a couple.
Yeah.
He just shut it down and said, screw it.
Forget it, yeah.
And I think he did the same thing again. He admitted it. He did the same thing against Bowling Green. He said, we tried this, didn't work. I wanted to go back to the running game. It's like, well, maybe give it another series or give it two.
Yeah.
And I get it. You're risk averse, as you always say, Bernsie.
Yeah.
So maybe. And I don't know if that'll see. Maybe. And again, now we're in conference play, so that's different too. Like, I do think it's a different animal. I do think their approach has been different in conference games, which we'll see. I mean, I'm interested in this Purdue game because it's a very winnable, they should win this game.
Yeah.
Before the season, we all said they should win this game, despite all the thing, even without all the stuff that's going on with Purdue right now. So that was not an answer to your question, I guess. But I think if he could change something, if I could change something, it's like, it's okay. Let some mistakes happen.
Yeah.
Like, as we go to, because failure is growth, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so let's give it another series, or let's not just go right back into our shell, even if you think that's the best way to do it, just to mix it up a bit.
Well,
I guess
it felt like the leash with the passing game got shorter in terms of against
100%.
Miami of Ohio.
Yeah.
They missed a couple things. Dalen Wright falls down. There were some drops. You miss Michael Brown Stevens deep. Tanner misses him. He had a step on him. And then it felt like Fleck just pulled the plug. I don't understand, for a guy who is a NFL receiver at one point, a collegiate wide receiver coach, why he is so tough on that group, because it's not like it's not there. Like, Dalen Wright falls down against Miami of Ohio. That play would have gone a long way.
Right.
Okay, the guy fell down. No, go back to it. Like, you remember, let's go 2019 Rutgers.
Yeah.
Kirk Ciarrocca.
Yeah.
You remember the play where Tanner misses Rashad Bateman in the end zone?
Yeah, did the
Kirk
same
Ciarrocca
play.
Kirk just goes to the exact
right
same play, and Tanner hits it.
Yeah.
Yet now you miss Michael Brown Stevens deep, and you pull the plug on the entire passing game. I just don't understand the dynamic right now between P.J. Fleck, Mike Sanford, in their passing game, and I think that has to change.
Yeah, because it is – it's almost like an inconvenience, like, all right, well, we tried it. Didn't work. Now we're going to do it my way.
It's not like it's not open. It is open.
I know.
So a guy made an error. Now go back to it, because you know schematically it's open, but Fleck just doesn't have the wherewithal to go back to it. And I just do not understand that. And let's see this weekend with Big Ten playback if that changes.
Because Purdue 2 years ago was the game where it was like, oh.
It changed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and Tanner has the best – he goes 22 of 23, 396 yards and 4 scores. I mean, best game of his life.
And they had like – one. To your point, I remember they had a one-play drive to Bateman in the third quarter.
Yeah.
It was like, I think I texted you. I was like, what the hell are we watching?
I know,
like, what is going on here in the house that Drew Brees built? I can't even believe this.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll see. I don't know. But why do you think – so what do you think is different about – because like – Tanner and Ciarrocca obviously had a good vibe.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Ciarrocca was tough on him. I remember, I mean, he
absolutely
was, like, real tough on him. Like,
yeah.
I remember him just like undressing him in a warm-up line at practice one time. I'm like, man, the guy threw, like, 4 touchdowns. I get it. We got to change our best. But, Jesus, you know, the guy's doing okay, Kirk. But, like, I wonder what is so different schematically, because you know PJ is going to bring in a guy that fits what he's done his whole career, which is now basically a decade. So it is weird that there's such a disconnect between one coordinator to the next of it not looking the same, besides the NFL receivers and everything that we've talked about.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it last year I would buy the excuse that no training camp,
sure,
new guy, all that we talked about. Well, going into this year, all we heard was more familiarity,
collaboration,
more comfort, everything
alignment.
Feels good. You know, we're on the same page. We got a good vibe. We got all these receivers to throw to. We got so many guys. We've heard that ad nauseum. And then for it just to not,
it's just been disconjointed. Still,
yeah.
You understood the discontinuity last year, but then this year again through four games, it's the same thing.
And I go back to like the Ohio State game, and there's been flashes where they'll have a series or two, and you're like, wow, okay,
yeah,
this is what it can be,
right?
But if it's a drop or an incomplete pass or a bad throw, it's just completely abandon it. And it's I agree with you, Garzia. It's like the lack of patience with mistakes from that. And I think PJ just says, well, let's get back to our bread and butter. Let's get back to what we do. Let's just run the ball, score enough points. We can beat this team with that.
Yep.
And I just think they got into a game where even that didn't work, and they just froze. They didn't have any plan B or any adjustment to it.
Well, I liked what PJ even said. He's like, I mean, how many chances do you want? He said that after the game. He's like, can't say we didn't have chance, which is true.
Yeah.
Like, even when they got the ball after the fumble, I'm like, okay, they might win it. Like, I never really felt like they were going to lose because
I figure
that, because I've seen it a million times. But I thought that was interesting when Flex, like, I mean, crap, we got enough chances, and we just couldn't do it.
Especially after the muffed punt, and Bowling Green fell on it like five times and still couldn't recover. It's like, okay, they're trying to give him this game.
Yeah, it's the homecoming guys.
Yeah, you want
to
bring up the special teams now?
Well, it's funny. Like, you mentioned patience and his lack of patience with the passing game so far. And yet the special teams has now had the longest leash I've ever seen. Between three egregious special teams penalties, if Trey Potts, and you mentioned it, I mean, right before that 3 minutes left in the game, they have Bowling Green's got the screwed up formation or something. Fleck is talking to Potts.
Right.
And they got so scared that that punter, who, oh, by the way, I think was averaging like 35 yards a punt, he got into it once, and it went over Anixted's head. And if Trey Potts doesn't line up in the parking lot and he can just run up on that ball normally, I think he houses it and it's 17-14. But Fleck gets so risk averse there. But I don't understand the longest leash I've ever seen with special teams, because here we are again.
Yeah.
That three special teams penalties that extend drives.
Yeah.
A missed field. Again, I say a missed field goal. It's a 52-yard. No, it's a college kicker.
You should go back to the third down play there.
Outside zone, baby.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's either outside zone. Like, here's where Minnesota's offense is struggling maybe the most.
We need this on video. You guys are stressed.
Like,
that whole sequence just drives me crazy.
Like, when Minnesota gets across the opponent 40, and they're sitting there between the 30 and 40, they just love to stall out with, because they go risk averse, run, and then it's like third and long. It's either a six-second passing play that Tanner doesn't have time for, or it's outside zone, and it's like you're in just no man's land. But to special teams, you've both heard me talk about it long enough. I want to let
everybody
talk
has,
about it.
Yeah, everybody has.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's
everything.
Yeah.
And the penalties. I mean, that's what's – because you can say like, oh, we don't like that they do a squib kick here or that they fair catch it here. And you and I argued about that for the Ohio State game.
Sure.
But when it's lining up over a center, and I know PJ said, it was right there, it was close, like, okay. Or Phillip Howard not really knowing what to do and running into the kicker. And I don't think, like, in terms of the scoreboard, either one of those had an effect. But you run the clock, you get field position. Like,
you lose a possession.
All of that matters. All of that matters. And I would say this, Burnsy, because you don't have kids, Chip does. my son, if I'm comparing my own house, my sons are the passing game, in that I have no patience with them, and my daughters are the special teams.
There you go.
In general,
I love this analogy.
Longest leash ever. Yeah. Baby girl can do whatever she wants, has fewer timeouts than her brothers do, and I'm sure the offense and defense is probably like, "What's going on with my sister? Like, why doesn't she get punished like we do? That's not fair," as they would say. I don't get it either.
Well, you're down there on the sidelines, and it feels like from watching it up in the press box, like Fleck in the last few games here has been certainly much more hands-on with special teams specifically than I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, you're on the sidelines.
I think he's always been kind of over it, kind of overseeing it. In terms of actually, like, he picks his spots on everything.
Yes.
You know, so, like, whatever he told Trey right before the punt. No idea if it was backup or whatever, or if he was just saying, hey, go be you. I mean, you never know. Like, it could be schematic. It could just be PJ being PJ. Like, he'll do that, too, where he'll say, I called one play today. It was give the ball to Mo on the fourth and one. Like,
sure.
So he'll, like, pick his spots and jump around. So I can't say with certainty, like, is it more, is it less? Like, he's just kind of always like one call away from just making his own decision. But I mean, I wouldn't blame him for trying to figure out exactly what's going on.
If I was the head coach, my special teams, I would be very involved.
Yeah.
At this point.
Well, I think Jerry Kill was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I think a lot of coaches are.
Because it's important.
Yeah.
It is. Like, especially when you're Minnesota or you're Iowa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I don't understand why you don't want to maximize that part of it. When you are going to have, against some of the teams you play, talent deficiencies, different injuries, things like that, like, it makes no sense for me to just kind of like deal with special teams. Like, some programs like make it a thing that like we're really good on special teams, and that makes a difference when you think about, I mean, in a 14-10 ball game, you don't think any special teams is going to help you, or the close games are probably going to be playing here the next couple of months. Like, all of that matters.
There were like five plays in special teams that could have absolutely submarined them.
Yeah.
You know, think about the punt that they didn't field. It's rolling. It gets into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
If that stops two rotations, now you're on the 1 yard line.
Right.
No idea why Brock annexed it. That ball landed 3 yards behind him, and he's standing at the 26 with nobody within 15 yards of him. But again,
it's things like that. It's just like that.
Just
they got
things.
Away with it.
Yeah.
Well, they lost, but they didn't. I don't think any of those things gave up points, if I remember correctly.
That's what they got away with.
Yeah.
But it all adds up.
But it
I mean,
adds,
the
yeah.
field position,
well,
the time.
The time is the big thing.
You lose a possession
You lost like
time.
Four minutes of time because you ran into the punter. Defense gets another stop. You line up over the long snapper for the second time. Oh, by the way, defense gets a strip from Braylon Oliver, but you could have had four more minutes on the clock to try and figure it out offensively. But I think we talked about it a little bit here. The West outside of Iowa stinks.
Yeah, well, let's get to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've gophered it out here.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, have you guys got everything you need to say out?
Get it off your chest.
Everything you've had. I mean, I listened to Gopher Gridiron. It was like a 2-hour episode. I mean,
Derek,
it was like,
he just kept going.
And you guys were all a mess. You think you guys were talking over each other. Poor Luke, that guy. He's,
yeah.
I mean, you might want to check on him today. He was all over you. He was stepping on. He's, he even goes, God, I'm so bad today. Just everybody. But that's what happens when you lose to Bowling Green. Like, that's what I'm going to talk to PJ about on the radio show. It's like the. When you're a player and a coach, you get to do something about it. Like, you just get to go back to work. Like, I'm sure this week at practice has been fine, right? They just go in, they do what they do, and I'm sure it's lingered a little bit, but, like, fans, media, it lingers for
Absolutely,
a long time.
Yeah.
The cool thing about being a player and coach is you get to forget and move on.
You get
on
to move on immediately.
And go play.
Everyone else gets to wait until Saturday.
Yeah, we've got content to fill.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's what we get to do. But the Big Ten West, yeah, we talked about the East at length last week. The Big Ten West is weird, and even watching the Iowa game when I got home, you know, they're down 14-7 at half.
Yep.
They're not doing anything offensively. And
shocker.
What do you know? A fumble at the 5-yard line for Colorado State, and one trick play later, it's 14-14, and basically the rest is history. Like, it's amazing. It's incredible what Iowa continues to do in a week by week. Because Colorado State sucks, by the way.
They're also
not very good.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Notre Dame and Wisconsin, obviously. But that was, I mean, I think Tim Brando and Spencer Tillman were doing it. And Spencer Tillman was like, this is kind of where Iowa usually makes a play. And bang,
fumble. There he is,
And Brian Ferentz does a trick play, which, by the way, he said this on a podcast the other day. Remember this. Brian said, I'm probably the most predictable offensive play caller in the country because anytime we're around the 20, I'm probably doing a trick play. And I had,
I don't know why
he said that. And I had that in my mind, and all of a sudden, you know, Spencer Petras is whipping his arms around all these different places, and Tyrone Tracy gets it, and he's gone. 5 yards. But anyway, it was bizarre.
I looked up the quarterback play from the West from this weekend. All the teams combined in the West, their completion percentage, 57%, 4 touchdowns, 10 interceptions.
Not elite.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about it going
There are some offensively challenged teams. Like, Iowa's good defensively. They're going to make plays on special teams, and they have that kind of just that ability to pull out games and do just enough on offense. But their offense is not anything that's going to frighten you.
Right.
There's no offense in this side of the Big Ten that frightens you.
I still would argue if Minnesota, again, it's a large ask, if can just figure it out enough in the passing game, I think they have the best offense in the West, which I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
But and that's where, again, you look across the rest of the West, and it's just like Illinois is a disaster.
Yeah, as expected.
Yeah.
Northwestern defensively and offensively.
As expected, given what they
lost.
What
do we think about Nebraska?
Their defense,
they're not as bad as I thought.
No.
After that first game, you thought, okay, this is
right. Well, if you thought special teams for Minnesota was bad, Nebraska would love to one-up you. Their special teams is effing horrible.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, they are absolutely dreadful. And their defense has actually played really well. They didn't allow Michigan State against former Golden Gopher offensive coordinator Jay Johnson.
That's right.
To get a first down in the second half. But again, Scott Frost, if he's shown anything, it's a propensity to lose every single close game.
Yeah.
And that's where you look at the Illinois game this year, the Oklahoma game, and now the Michigan State game. They had ample opportunities to win all those games, and that team just can't figure it out. And, by the way, I think they have like 5 ranked teams left on the schedule.
Yeah,
right.
So
defensively, I don't know where they rank points allowed, but
they're much improved.
Yeah, they're
Martinez
they're
is playing
bad.
Better, but they're still having issues offensively with them.
Yeah. I don't think the quarterback's consistent enough to be.
He's kind of an ultimate tease. Like
he'll
do
make
something.
Some plays. He'll make a couple plays. You're like, okay, but he's just the consistency is just not.
Well, they're also
we
running him as much as we. I mean, he's got 15, 20 carries a game now, which scares. If I was a Nebraska fan, that scares me because it's very thin behind him. And then, I've now coined the term, and you tell me if I think I'm wrong. With Graham Mertz, I think he's a game manager Brett Favre. And what I mean by that is they want him to be a game manager, but then he can't help himself with some of these throws he makes. I mean, he's got 6 picks now and 1 interception. And then, oh, by the way, this weekend, Michigan comes to town. And last I checked, that's a pretty good defense. So if Wisconsin loses again and Mertz throws a couple more picks, what in the world is going to happen in Madison?
Does he have more pick sixes than touchdown throws?
Yes, this year. Yeah, he threw 2 pick sixes last week, and he's got 1 touchdown pass through the
year. Well, you probably know this off the top of your head, but, I mean, just take out the Illinois game last year, and his numbers have to be just
dreadful.
Because
this year, obviously, is bad. And it's so given the hype.
I know.
Given, like, the day he signed, I mean,
everybody
a big
wanted
deal.
Him.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Oh, by the way, Minnesota legacy recruit, Graham Mertz, if you want to go there.
Nebraska is right in the middle of the Big Ten in scoring defense, 17 points a game they allow.
So they're pretty good.
They're trailing, Penn State, Purdue, Maryland, Rutgers, Michigan, and Iowa in that regard. So they are right in
that mix. They're defensively, they're not as bad as
right.
And Purdue's better defensively.
They're just so beat up.
But offensively, they're incredibly beat up.
Yeah.
And it's just like you look at the next 4 games for Minnesota. You got on the road in West Lafayette, bye week to prepare for Nebraska, and then Maryland at home, and then you got to go to Evanston in that JV stadium with 4,000 people.
4,000?
I'm being kind.
The Gopher's going to bring them off?
So is this your silver linings part?
Well, it's more like, would it surprise
the
you
the same
at all?
Opportunity exists that we talked about last week.
I agree.
Yes,
I mean,
the same opportunity is still
there. They could go 4-0, but if they show up like they did against Bowling Green, they'll go 1-3.
After a performance like Saturday, if they were in the East, I would say this is the sky is falling.
Yeah. Right,
because you're in the West, and because the West is just not good, you think if they can just get their stuff together along the line and pass, then there's no. You know, I think Iowa's still the best team, obviously.
Yep. Yeah, but let me say this about Iowa: they're 2 big wins, Indiana and Iowa State.
Are we sure?
Don't look
good?
As good now. Yeah,
I was talking to my dad about this. I'm like, are we sure they're good? Like, are we sure they're okay? Like
you look at the Friday night game.
I'm excited about
this.
This will be a good game for both teams, I think.
Yeah.
Maryland and Iowa. I think it's a good litmus test for both of them.
It's funny because that over-under in that game is like 45 when Maryland's put up like gaudy stats, but Iowa's got a tremendous defense.
Right.
Like it's going to be an interesting 2 weeks here because I believe they got Iowa's on the road at Maryland Friday night, and then they host Penn State on a night game on the 9th for Minnesota's bye week.
Yep.
And that's what frustrated me, guys, about Saturday, if you're from a Gophers perspective. You reduce your margin of error in a year where it feels like that thing's very winnable.
Yeah, I said it with Barrero on the radio. Like, even in the NFL, like the last couple of years, like I haven't sensed a lot of greatness. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like obviously Tampa became great.
Sure.
They're probably great this year. The Rams might be great this year. Like, but like the usual suspects are, and even in college football in general,
it's
like who's good?
There's Clemson's not that super team where you're
no. Who's
like,
good?
Okay, this team's winning national title, and everybody else is shooting for the Peach Bowl.
Like I think it's gonna be fun. I think because we're gonna see some new blood. It looks like, but it's like who's good? Who do we think is really good? We don't really know.
Well, I think I saw the stat that 25 ranked teams
at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, 25 ranked teams have lost games already, which is the most through the first 4 weeks in X amount of years.
Yeah, it was like half of the original top 25 have already lost 2 games. It's like 11 or 12. And that includes Indiana, that includes Iowa State.
There's a ton of ambiguity out there.
Is part of that because teams schedule tougher early on?
Maybe. Yeah. Part of it is there's a lot of – I mean, I think everybody's kind of with the super seniors and the COVID years and who leaves, who's not, like teams that maybe are better.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows?
I think it's probably all that. And probably there's just – I think the super senior thing has created a little more parity and given teams that maybe would be starting over more experience.
A chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, like, it's Alabama. But even Alabama, it's like they play Ole Miss this weekend, and that offense for Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin is rolling.
Yeah.
Like, that Corral kid they got at quarterback has been tremendous. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Even Alabama's shown warts. It's just it's a strange year, and I feel like it's an evergreen saying because it feels like every year of college football is a little weird. But
yeah.
Especially here in the West this year, it's just like,
yeah.
To your point, Chip, the opportunity is still right in front of them, and it's got to start this weekend. You got to rebound, and I think they will play to the level of their opponent. But
like, if I was PJ, that would be the message I'm drilling home. And yeah. I know he does. We got to do one game, but I would say
got to go
1-0
in the Purdue season.
He said it either Saturday or Monday. You know, everything's still in front of us.
Yeah,
which is
I would
true,
say and look around at this league.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to be facing murderer's row.
Well, even look at the four games in November. We thought there was going to be three ranked opponents there at the end. And, again, I think Wisconsin will end up being ranked by that time because their schedule lightens up considerably after this weekend. But Indiana doesn't look like the crazy team that we thought.
It does not.
No.
Your four November games, you're at home against Brett Bielema. You should win that game. You go on the road to Kinnick, which is going to be your toughest one. Then you got to go on the road to Bloomington, which I don't know that Indiana team's particularly good. And then you get to face Wisconsin at home, which first one to 17 points wins.
That's right.
So everybody's got warts, but which team come November when it's going to come down to the deciding time can actually win a close game?
Yep.
Anything else you guys want to discuss? I've got one more thing I want to discuss before we go. It's nothing crazy. But I mean, you're about to go fishing, Bernsie.
Hit it with
Well, everywhere we go, people talk about Parents Bear podcast. And we just want to say we appreciate everybody that's listening.
I will say this. I actually got the tailgate. I went to the game, and I got there early, invited myself to throw it out.
Classic Chip.
Hey, can I come to your tailgates? And people said, yeah, so I stopped at some. But just walking through, I can't tell you how many people said, hey, I love Parents Bear. And I know this is patting ourselves on the back, but it really felt good.
Yeah.
Because we thought there's
a market.
An appetite there.
That's
a
right.
Market for it.
That's
and
right.
And so we appreciate people agreeing with that concept.
That's right. Yeah, and if you want to sponsor us, you can do that too. Just stop Chip in a parking lot at the next game at Huntington Bank Stadium. But we appreciate Northern Lids, northernlids.com, for jumping in and being the first. Really, before we even said, hey, it was like, hey, we're doing a podcast, and Northern Lids is like, we're sponsoring it. We'd love to sponsor it, so we appreciate Northern Lids. Check out if you want to get some hats. I might consider Rocky Mountain High to Rock Bottom. I don't know if that's too many letters. I don't know if they can make a patch like that, but northernlids.com is where you want to check it out. I meant to do this last week. I want to thank our listener in Italy for listening to us.
Wow.
We have a listener in Italy, apparently. We have a listener in Croatia.
One of your favorite places.
Love visiting Croatia.
Too.
Yeah,
you
more
West
of a
Sider.
Winter in Croatia.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I bid on that in a live auction one time, 10 days in Croatia.
Of course you did, Cake.
Yeah, Lou Nanny outbid me.
Yeah,
Malawi, Malawi.
I'll be honest, my East Metro education doesn't know where that is.
We have one in Mexico. Did I mention France? Thank you, France. And three in Australia, six in Germany. We're big with the Germans.
Wow.
Mark Crawford's family must love us. Or the Australian people.
That's probably it.
Any in Tennessee?
I was going to get to that. I was going to get to that because the United States.
This is a Vols podcast.
Tennessee. Man, where are we here? Oh, we got two in Montana. Lucky, living in Montana. A couple in Arkansas. A couple in Idaho. A couple in Alaska. Six in Rhode Island. Where's Tennessee? Because Chip just got to do some promoting last weekend or 2 weekends ago.
I did.
Back in Tennessee. We have 35 listeners in Tennessee, apparently.
Really?
35.
My people, I love it. Thank you.
So tell a friend if you're listening in Tennessee that we're here. We'd like to see that one bulk up a little bit. But we appreciate everybody listening from wherever you are. And if you are one of those that's listening internationally, tell us what brought you. Like, what are you doing in Malawi? Or Malawi. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Where is that? I honestly have no idea.
Let me find out here for you. Because we got time. We got a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, hit us up on Twitter, Chip. What's your Twitter?
At Chip Scoggins.
I'm at Ryan Burns MN. And what are you, JGKFAN?
JGKFAN,
yeah. Slide into the DMs if you want to be a sponsor for any of us. We'd love it.
Well, this isn't helping me.
Well, here's what I'll say. I think when you look at the game this weekend, I think they win.
I'm predicting a win. I think they bounce back.
I agree. Yeah, I think I absolutely think
I'm gonna right. I'm gonna go 24-17.
Guardsy?
Hang on, I'm trying to find out where Mallory is. All right, do you really think I can
I'm gonna say 24-21, but it wouldn't surprise me either if Minnesota can figure it out offensively. Against, again, what has been a better Purdue defense this year.
But is this their third defensive coordinator in 4 years?
By the way, they have three co-defensive coordinators on Jeff Brohm's staff this year, which I've never heard of. Three
Jeez.
Guys.
So you don't know who to hold accountable when it goes wrong. Just take your guess.
Yeah.
Is it at all three levels? So the line.
I think it's the D-line coach, linebackers coach, and then one of the secondary coaches. I don't know how in the world
who
that
runs
dynamic.
The meeting?
That's a great question. I wish I knew the answer to that one.
Malawi is a landlocked country in southeastern Africa that was formerly known as Nyasaland or Nyasaland. It's bordered by Zambia to the west, Tanzania to the north and northeast, and Mozambique to the east, south, and southwest.
Whoever this listener is, please let us know how you got here, because that's going to be a great story.
Or it's somebody that's like, it's like somebody hacking us and we don't even know. They've stolen our identity and this is like a shell. Where should we say we're from?
We had a good run, didn't we?
Yeah, right. It's endowed with spectacular highlands and extensive lakes. It occupies a narrow, curving strip of land along the East African Rift Valley. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Whether you're in Minnesota or Malawi, don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right, but let us know where you are. You're going to the game?
I'm going. I'll be there.
You'll be back. You're going walleye fishing.
I'm going up to Lake Winnebogoshish for a few days.
I can't find that either.
Malawi Deer River, or Minnesota. For those of you in middle Minnesota, I love you.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Reminder, subscribe, rate, tell a friend if you haven't. Thanks again to Northern Lids, northernlids.com. If you want to update your hat game a little bit, they've got great stuff. Northernlids.com. We appreciate them partnering with us, and we appreciate all of you listening to the Parent of Spare podcast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.